Hi and welcome to this week's Off the Bench. I'm Gianni Baticci.
And hi there, this is Prez.
Hey Prez, and look, game week 34 is in full swing. We've still got four fixtures, eight teams to play, including matches for teams we're really heavily invested in. Brighton, Man United, Man City, Liverpool. I think I've got 10 of my 11 to play. How many have you got and how's your game week going?
I've got 10 out of 11 as well. I mean, this is what we were planning for in the double game week, to have as many of the doublers as possible. So yeah, I think we've both done well with 10. My game week's been actually pretty good. Even though I took a 8-point hit, I'm on 65 points. Obviously, Captain Haaland coming through, but you know, happy with holding Bruno Fernandes through some of the blanks and the injury issues. Shaw coming in after his double miss of a clean sheet where he was not in the squad. So very happy. How's yours?
Yeah, not too bad. Like you, I took a minus 8. It does feel like hits were widely accepted this week amongst the FPL community. So yeah, we both made those minus 8 moves. 57 for me. Fairly hopeful going into the second part of the game week. I've got a few players that I'm hoping to get big performances from. We'll speak more about the likes of Jota later. But yeah, I've got him who I'm hoping for a start. This is Fulham as a nice little differential. But look, there's so much to discuss in today's show. Like, we have to talk about Man City. We have to talk about United and Brighton and Spurs. Should we start with Liverpool? Because they feel like a team we're all fairly heavily invested in. They probably had the best of all the double game weeks.
Yep.
Returns all over the place. They're scoring goals, but they're also conceding goals for fun, right?
I mean, it was a classic where at the end of the game, if you didn't want to watch every game, every Liverpool game in the season, you just watch this one and then you get a fairly good idea of where Liverpool were this year, you know, attacking threat, everybody looking great at the front end and at the back end, so poor, letting in poor goals. And yeah, it was a classic, actually. The game itself was amazing.
I don't know how to read Liverpool with the new system and how that works for FPL. Like, what we're seeing is it's almost a back three with Trent playing in that inverted mid role, which is what we've been seeing at Man City at late, with John Stones doing it and previously Cancelo.
Right.
And Trent is now almost like a double pivot with Fabinho. And what that means for FPL is we see Salah fairly wide on the right-hand side because he doesn't have an overlapping run anymore, Salah. He used to have Trent on his shoulder. Now he's not. So Salah's even wider. That perhaps strengthens the appeal of Hakpo and Jota when they're playing, who are more central than Salah. But then I look at the back and think, how is Konate meant to defend against in a back three when he's covering on the right-hand side? Because there's no right back.
Yeah.
But then also they have their left back. Usually when you have a back three, the three of them sit. But Liverpool have still got a left back in Robertson that wants to get forward. So often it's just the two centre backs covering the whole back four. And I can't see many clean sheets if they keep playing like this. But I can see loads of goals. And Trent in the new role certainly has added to his assist threat, hasn't it?
I mean, absolutely. Trent is on a run of five consecutive matches where he has had an assist. Just imagine if he had clean sheets as well to add to that. But I think you're right in the system. Well, A, it does, you know, people sort of were debating whether this is good or bad for Trent. But I think given how well he passes, yeah, I think him getting on the ball more can only be a good thing. Even though he won't whip in the crosses, he'll get those assists through the passes. And he will get in the box. I mean, you saw the first goal that Curtis Jones scored, it was that classic Trent cross that came in.
Yeah.
Now, for Robertson, a lot of people did go for him. And I do worry that because of the thing you said, maybe he doesn't get as much forward, given he will have defensive duties more than normal in this particular new role. But look, I mean, defensively, you don't want to be doubling up anyway after this double game week. So if you went there, then great. But otherwise, it's probably going to be, a Jota, a Gakpo that will be actually immense value as long as you can predict the minutes.
Yeah. And that game at the weekend, 4-3, like predicting the front three going into it was tough. We knew Jota had a slight back injury and I took a punt on Jota, but he comes on with 30 minutes to go, but still impresses in terms of his like creativity and shot volume. He does look like Liverpool's most dangerous attacker. And when you look at the stats and the XG numbers there, like Jota is shining. And I hope he starts versus Fulham. Does it lessen the appeal of Salah knowing how Hakpo and Jota are performing, do you think? Because I don't feel like Salah's essential for the run-in at all.
Well, look, I think it's the minutes, right? I mean, I think Salah is, sometimes we overblow the fact that he's too wide. I mean, he's been doing that his whole career. He knows when to come in. He knows exactly when to make that run. So I still, I think Salah, price indifference, I think Salah is still the number one pick. However, these other two guys aren't the same price. So you can save a lot of money, go for somebody else that is a premium like a Kane and De Bruyne, who we'll talk about, and get these guys in. The problem with Jota is, even though he is, I think, the most potent, like you said, He's now also competing with Diaz and Darwin Núñez for the exact same spot. Now, Darwin has been coming on for Gakpo more recently, playing a little bit more central. But I think you can pretty much say that Gakpo will get most of the minutes because he's doing that central Firmino role really well in the last few games. And I think Klopp just likes him. So then you're sort of taking a punt on who gets most minutes. I think it'll be Jota, but he's not going to get every game.
Yeah, I guess I'm with you there. I also do wonder how Klopp looks at the goals Jota's been scoring of late and thinks he can be my number nine. He can play in the Gakpo role. We saw him playing in the Bobby Firmino role last year a lot, didn't we? So I think there's a couple of routes to the team for Jota, which perhaps there isn't for all of those guys. But if I just look at the non-Pen XG versus Spurs, Jota got 27 minutes. He clocked the highest XG. 0.39 non-penalty. You know, it's a very small sample size. We've taken one game, but, you know, Diaz second, Gakpo third, Salah 0.06 XG, like, didn't threaten at all. But obviously,
it was just the penalty.
We know he's on penalties, which is good because he missed his last couple, didn't he?
Yeah, and I didn't own him for those two, and I did for this one, so I'm very thankful.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think for the run-in, we can safely say Liverpool attackers, they're going to score goals between now and the end of the season. It's still fine committing there. And if you're buying defenders, it has to be Trent, but don't expect clean sheets. But I don't think we need them with Trent because he will bag some assists. What did you make of Spurs, though? Because Harry Kane was sold en masse. I sold Kane and fairly happy with that decision despite the points because I needed the money and I knew I wanted to back a double game week premium player rather than Kane on a single game week. But the fixtures are still there for Kane. He scores against anyone. I don't know. I think he's still a very good FPL asset. I don't see us captaining Kane between now and the end of the season, but he should probably be in more teams than he is.
I mean, I agree. It's just one of those things where I think I've had a Kane blind spot this whole season, and this guy could actually churn out his best season ever in terms of FPL potential, not for Spurs, not for, you know, the team itself, but for him as an FPL asset. He's been absolutely incredible, consistent. If Haaland didn't exist this year, we'd all be captaining Kane on a weekly basis and talking about him as one of the best FPL players. We already talk about him as the best Premier League players or strikers that we've ever seen. So it's incredible. And it's just the fact that we cannot afford three premiums in our teams and you want the doublers. So a lot of people went the Kane sale to get Salah in. Now, would you really want to do this hit again to get Kane back? Look, I think if people wanted to go there, be different. There's nothing wrong with it. The guy, the Spurs have got easy-ish fixtures now till the end of the season. Yeah. So if there's ever a time to be different and get Kane back or even Son, I mean, we'll talk about Son. It's not a bad thing, even though Spurs are not looking great.
Yeah, you don't want to be playing the teams kind of at the top of the table this time of season, but you don't want to be playing those in the relegation scrap either. And when you look at Spurs' fixtures remaining, they've got Palace who are safe, not a huge amount to play for. Villa, you could argue there's a bit there, and same with Brentford, a small chance there of European football. But they're nice, probably, teams to play for Spurs. They end the season at Leeds in game week 38, who could be relegated or could have a lot to play for. But Son maybe becomes an option. I mean, he was priced fairly high in FPL this season, Son, so his ownership's been low all season. But again, he's starting to look sharp, and 11.5 million feels like a big gamble. If you want a differential and you're chasing in your mini leagues and you're looking for players that no one else has got, Son could just be an option. I mean, the Spurs attack is clearly turning a little corner. Three goals against Liverpool, but also hit the woodwork. Was it three times as well? So, you know, they're clocking the XG.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I mean, basically, when they let in the three goals, after a little while, they changed the system and then went 5-3-2, in which Son was playing right up front alongside Kane. And we know when he plays right up front, he makes the runs and Kane finds him. So I think we're getting into the time of the year in FPL where people have different motivations getting into the run-in. Some may want to hold and some may want, you know, we're happy where they are. And some just want to go for it. And I think Son pick or even a Kane pick just feels like one that is you go for it.
Yeah. Have you got any players that you've already got your eye on for next season? Because I look at this Spurs team and I'm like, there is someone in this Spurs team we've not spoken about yet, but I know if he's priced right, he's going to be in my team game week one if the fixtures are there for Spurs. And that is Pedro Porro, 0.8% owned, especially if he's playing in a wing-back system. We don't know who the new manager will be at Spurs, but he shoots on sight. He's a going to be a great FPL option, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he scored against Man United, the team I support, last game week. And yeah, he's just one of those, reminds me of Marcus Alonso, maybe on the other side, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, the kind of guy who will always get in, hungry to be involved in the attack and more interested in that probably over the defending. And that's the kind of FPL player you want if he's a defender.
Yeah, yeah. I love that we're thinking already, like, I'm watching games going, oh, not a huge amount left this season. But next season, I'm thinking in 4 months' time who I might be picking already. Crazy. We love this game. If we're looking at next season, Brighton will be a team we definitely want to look at, right? Like, they're going to have tons of options. If De Zerbi's there, they're always going to score goals.
Absolutely. What a team. What a joy to watch these guys. I mean, before the game, when Mitoma and McAllister and Casedo were rotated, everybody worried for Brighton that they're going to ship goals. They may not be as lethal in attack. And what happened? 6-0.
Crazy. And it's the guys we haven't been looking at. We committed to our Brighton assets, well, I'd say weeks, but probably even months ago, because Brighton were getting the double game weeks and the blank game weeks early.
27, yeah.
We feel like we don't want to make those sideways moves within a team because transfers cost us 4 points and that's a huge amount each week and huge risk. So when we commit to our assets within a team, we usually stay with them. And it was the usual suspects, McAllister, March, Mitoma, Estupinan, you know, Steele. But then there's players like Nciso and you know, Welbeck's had a little bit of form. And when they get minutes, when they start, you're like, okay, these are really good value options. But I still think the tried and tested, the Mitomas, McAllisters and Marches for the run-in are going to be really, really valuable to us. And I do think De Zerbi knows his first choice 11. I think we can probably name 9-10 of them fairly comfortably.
Yeah.
And the guys just mentioned are all in there. So I think if you own those midfielders, you definitely stick and you're going to get points.
Yeah, I think it's worth talking about them individually just for a second. So I think Solly March, you know, he got the start, 55 minutes. Yeah. I mean, Brighton in general was so tired after the FA Cup semi-final went to extra time. Even the Premier League game before this went to 105 minutes. So they needed that little break. And March, look, I think he's steady. He, you know, he can spike a haul, but I think he, for me, guarantees a lot more minutes, given that Mitoma looked a little bit tired. McAllister, now let's talk about him. The issue is he obviously plays in the number 10 position whenever, you know, Nciso isn't playing, or more importantly, when Veltman is playing. Because yeah, what happens is when Veltman is out, Gross moves to right back and then McAllister has to play in the six. So that's the risk you take with McAllister, that, you know, in some games you'll get the number 10 and in some games you'll get number six. He may get some minutes in both positions in each game. So you may get that attacking upside. And then, of course, he has penalties. And then lastly, you know, Mitoma is just a wonderful player. And you, I just, you know, I, when I watch Brighton play, I want to own that player because he'll be involved in, you know, so much assist potential when he dribbles into the box and just pings the ball inside. So a lot of people have two of these three guys, and I think they should be happy to own either of the three.
Yeah. Brighton with a double game week, of course, in game week 36 and in 37. So they're going to have back-to-back doubles. What about Estupinan? Because do you own Estupinan, Praz?
I do. And I've been pained with, you know, a lot of blanks. And finally, he returns for me. And do you own him as well?
Yeah. And I'm happy. 9 points is great. But it could have been so much more, couldn't it? The chance creation, but also he shoots and he was unlucky not to score. He should have scored at the weekend, don't you think?
That one-on-one, yeah.
So, I mean, look, 9 points, we're happy. He outscored Steele, he outscored Dunk, a few are on those guys. But I do think, again, like Estupinan, between now and the end of the season, you look at the double game weeks to come, he's due a goal. And when he scores a goal, if they keep a clean sheet in that fixture, you've got to think bonus points will be on as well. So I think we've got a big double-digit score coming for Estupinan. But also, he feels like he's a little bit of a minutes monster. Like, from all the guys that have been rested off the back of those two long games you refer to, I wondered if we might see some rotation at both fullbacks. We've seen Gross and Veltman swapping in and out, and it doesn't feel like there's much threat there at Brighton for the left-back spot, because since Cucurella left, it's just Estupinan. I mean, Veltman probably can play there. I think he's played in all positions along the back line. And Lamptey, again, he has rotated with Estupinan in the past and got some minutes at left back, although Lamptey's right back. But again, counting on Lamptey fitness, it's probably unlikely he'll feature or start between now and the end of the season. So Estupinan, we're like, yeah, we're going to get starts every game.
Yeah, it feels like that. In fact, in game week 26, when I played my wild card, I stumbled upon an article which said exactly this, that Brighton don't have a left-footed left back that they would trust. So pretty much Estupinan is the one they have to rely on. And if you remember in the previous game, when Estupinan was taken off, it was Solly Marge who had to play there because they needed somebody who's left-footed who can play there. They literally have nobody who can play. And he's obviously, you know, like you said, his fitness is great. So you will get a lot of minutes with him. So I think I'm like you. I don't worry about him missing a lot. When there's so many doubles, you never know. I mean, who predicted that Mitoma and McAllister would miss a game? So you never know. But I think as defensive cover goes, a lot of people picked Dunk over Estupinan because of the minute security. I don't think that's the case. And Steele is a different case because he's just so cheap if he continues to play.
Yeah. Yeah, doing really well. They've done well, served us well, Brighton. And look, most teams you look at are going to be on triple Brighton. And if you're not on triple Brighton, I think you'll probably be looking at your transfers, thinking back-to-back doubles. Not the easiest doubles. Arsenal, Newcastle in one, and then Southampton, City in another. But I think Brighton are a team that will score goals against anyone. So you're going to want to stack up.
Yeah, I was going to talk about 36 double actually with you. Obviously, away to Arsenal, away to Newcastle, a lot of people will have three of them.
Yeah.
But then Newcastle also doubled that particular week. So we will transition to Newcastle where people will need to decide who their captain is. And I don't think you want to trust a Brighton player away to Arsenal, away to Newcastle. You could. I think they're still an attacking team, like you said. Those are really tough games. So have you given some very early thoughts on 36?
I think it will be, as you say, Newcastle. Leeds and Brighton feels like a better combination. You think of that Leeds game for Newcastle and we expect goals. But again, we don't know what's going on at Leeds either. And maybe that narrative can change where they become a team where actually we don't expect 4-0 victories.
Correct.
But at the moment, Newcastle, I mean, originally when I first looked ahead at 36, I thought it'll be Trippier.
Yeah.
I just thought I'll be boring. It'll be Trippier. But the way Newcastle are playing of late, I think it's one clean sheet in the last 13 games, something like that. It's pretty poor.
Yeah.
I want to back on a Newcastle forward and I still don't know which one I'll be buying. I mean, if we go from the weekend just gone, Callum Wilson comes off the bench and clocks a huge amount of chances, scores goals, partners with Isak really well. But as we know, when they're on the pitch together, Isak is the creator and Wilson is the number nine.
Yep.
So if we know they're both guaranteed a start, of which Eddie Howe doesn't seem to ever do, he doesn't start them together, then Wilson's the pick. But the problem with Wilson is he doesn't quite get Isak's minutes. So it's going to be really tricky which one I buy, but I'll almost certainly be buying one of them and I'll probably captain whoever that is.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. So yeah, let's continue talking about Newcastle then. So yeah, I agree with you that you know, whoever one of them gets more minutes should be the one you captain. But a lot of people actually have Isak already because they went for him to fund another move earlier. And so they're debating whether they should get both. What do you think on getting both?
I mean, it's fun. It's the problem with getting both is most teams, myself included, already has two Newcastle defenders. So I'm blocked by getting two Newcastle attackers unless I make a defensive transfer as well. I don't think I want to spend enough transfers there. Knowing we've only got a handful of transfers, free transfers left between now and game week 38, they're all so precious. And I don't know if it's worth the 4-point hit. My team's not really set up to accommodate both because I've got a dead spot there as well. I've got Greenwood up front, who's my third bench option, who's meant to ease those benching headaches. And if I buy both, then I'm back into that dilemma of who am I benching each week. So I think I'll be committing to one. And at the moment, I think a lot will hinge on what I see in the game before. So the game before the double game week, Newcastle play Arsenal, and I'll be looking at the minutes of Callum Wilson there thinking, oh, okay, he only got 20 minutes. Maybe he's due a start against Leeds. Therefore, I'll take a pun.
Yeah.
But it's gonna be a pun. It's going to be a pun. And I think we'll be completely split. I think there's a strong argument for Isak and there's a very strong argument for Callum Wilson. I mean, if we look at Wilson's numbers in the last six game weeks, he's only had 309 minutes, not a huge amount. But in that time, he's clocked 16 shots, eight of which were big chances, eight goals, one assist. You know, in six game weeks, eight goals, one assist, and an XG of just shy of four, like 54 points.
Incredible.
Super impressive.
Yeah. I mean, the guy just, you know, it's been an unwritten rule that when Wilson gets minutes, he gets goals. And that's basically his underlying data is better than Kane's. So you just give him minutes and he gets goals. So it's a case of Isak's been so great that the poor guy hasn't been starting. But, you know, I reckon there's a shout that he does start Wilson and Isak against Arsenal. And if they do well, then I think then you know which one to get. I mean, arguably, then I would go for a Wilson if he's getting those minutes, like you said.
I think you're right. I think we'll get both starting now because Eddie Howe's been cautious over that for multiple reasons. Champions League football, got to carry on as we've been going, and it's been working with two of the midfielders playing in the front three and then one number nine. But also, I think he was quoted over the weekend of saying something along the lines of, Wilson, historically, we've had to play every game. And playing three games in a week for Callum Wilson leads to injuries. And we know his injury record's been poor.
Yeah.
But now we've got this great other option in Isak. I can bench Wilson and he can play, maybe start one in every two games. And it means when he plays, he's fresh. And he can feature in every game, but he doesn't have to get 90. And it means he's fit. And when he's fit, he's scoring goals.
Yeah.
But now we've only got a handful of games left. I do wonder, with some nicer spacing for Newcastle, I do wonder if he goes, I want to see ahead of next season if this is going to be my first choice front three. And it includes Isak on the left and Wilson in the nine.
Yeah, yeah, that's a fair shout. And I think people looking at double strike, so both Isak and Wilson, I think that's fair as well. But the only caveat that I have, if you plan your team ahead in terms of how you get to them, of course, the problem that you have double defense. But let's say you don't have double defense. The problem I have with two strikers is, obviously, you'll have two Brighton attackers as well. So that's four attackers already taken up by Brighton and Newcastle. Man City play Everton. Man United are home to Wolves. And Liverpool play Leicester. So these are games where, you know, you're basically sacrificing a Man City attacker or a Man United attacker just to get another Newcastle player. So I'd rather think that you make your bed with the captain and go for that attacker that you want from Newcastle. And that it sounds a little bit more risky, but I think you're still better off doing that.
Yeah, totally agree. If you were to bet on who you think you'll buy ahead of that game week, then where are you at, Praz? Which one would you think? At the moment, I think I'm more likely to go Wilson, but I wouldn't be surprised if I changed my mind.
My heart says Wilson as well, because I know that he's getting better. He's getting more of the minutes. And I think he's just, it looks to be just the sweet spot that over the double, he gets a start or maybe even a two starts. And, you know, Isak got 0.0 XG yesterday in the game. Now, he's amazing. I mean, that pre-assist that he got in the previous game week where he should, you know, he could have got that assist if, you know, it obviously he was intending to pass it to Wilson. He didn't get it, but it was one of the most amazing dribbles, and he just shows that what an amazing player he is. And I don't fault anyone for going for Isak because he's looked absolutely wonderful, but Wilson gets the points when he starts.
Yeah, definitely one that I put in the category of, oh, next season, definitely want to be on my watch list. Like, now he's settled in the Premier League, season two for Isak could be super explosive. We can see what a player he is.
Absolutely.
In terms of the weekend just gone, Praz, you must have been happy with Man United winning 1-0, because again, a clean sheet, and you can, you know, clean sheet against Brighton in the FA Cup semi-final over 120 minutes, I thought was really impressive.
Yeah.
But then again, in the Premier League, one of only, I think, two teams so far, and we're recording this Tuesday morning, to have kept a clean sheet. You know, Brighton kept a clean sheet, but United too, and many shore owners are finally being rewarded.
Look, very happy with the team, especially defensively. Now, I remember against Sevilla when we lost Martinez and Varane, and people started worrying about the defense. They forgot the fact that Casemiro is back, Eriksen is back, and that's actually major for the team. Those are the two guys who run the show, and it improves the team defensively and from an attacking perspective, because Bruno Fernandes can join the attack rather than sort of spending the time where Eriksen plays. So we saw this this game where actually Bruno played, you know, right wing, and Rashford in fact started up top, and the team looked great. I mean, Villa is a good team. They've been playing really well away from home. Well, of course, at home as well. And to keep them quiet, relatively quiet for the whole game was great. And the guy who gets all the plaudits for this game is Victor Lindelof. Absolutely amazing. That goal line clearance, his passing ability. Him and Shaw is pretty much, for me, almost as good as a Varane and a Martinez partnership, which is saying a lot.
I must admit, like, when Shaw played centre-back, was it 6 weeks ago or a couple of months ago, he slotted in at centre-back, and I think a few eyebrows were raised because we'd seen him play centre-back in a back three under various managers, but we'd never really seen it in a two. And he came in, played really well. And I remember from an FPL perspective thinking straight away, I'll just check out the bonus points. Shaw was top. And I remember thinking, oh, maybe bonus points are really good for him at centre-back. And he does. When you watch the games, he clocks up, tackles, interceptions, blocks really, really well. So, of course, his open play assist threat is lower.
He is.
Although he still is on set pieces, so the assist threat is still there. But at centre-back, he's actually slightly better, or can slightly be better, depending on the game, for bonus points. And yeah, him and Lindelof looks like a great partnership. I mean, kept Ollie Watkins quiet. And I just bought David De Gea on a on what, as part of my minus eight, and I was really pleased with seeing how solid that United backline looked. So yeah, good signs ahead. But I think, as you mentioned, like Casemiro clearly is the key. What about United attack though, Praz? Because seeing Bruno slightly higher up the pitch as an owner, you must have been very happy. I mean, I sold Bruno like many did a couple of weeks back when we saw the injury. Yeah, it was my only route to Salah anyway. So I think even if Bruno had been fit, I'd have been very tempted to go to Salah for this double game week. I don't look back at that decision and think, oh, I wish I hadn't have made it necessarily. But I do think Salah to Bruno might be a switch I make moving forward, knowing Salah's double game weeks are now gone and Bruno still has another one in game week 37. So yeah, Bruno does feel like, I mean, most have got Rashford, but the Bruno-Rashford double up feels like a good route, right?
Especially in game week 37 when they have another double, right? I think the thing with Bruno is he always looks threatening. Even if, you know, there was a lot of, you know, people were talking about he's too deep and he's not. Against Everton, where he played really deep, he had so many chances. You know, Antony could have scored a couple. So it's not that Bruno, even if he's playing in the six or an eight, that he's not involved. He's always involved. Obviously, he's on penalties. But yes, if he's playing the 10 or if he's playing on the right, then he's even more involved. And you saw that in the goal. So as a Bruno owner, I'm very happy that I have him and I can fit him in a structure where I can have Salah and Bruno. And I know that wasn't easy. And in fact, I had a dilemma actually when I was buying Salah this week. I could have sold Bruno or I could have sold Grealish. And now selling a double game week or Grealish wasn't very easy. We'll talk about Man City and how great Grealish looked. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I wanted to keep the penalty taker and I wanted to keep the guy who I know will get all the minutes and, you know, more attacking threat over that period where I wanted to hold him. So I don't fault anyone for selling Bruno. And I know he's, you know, if you were to sort of say, is he worth his price of almost 10 million? Maybe he's not. He's closer to an 8.5, 9 million mid. But then at this stage of the season, you want to get the points. And if the structure is slightly off, then that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, Bruno's ownership so low. I can't remember. It's 7.2%. But I think part of that is it's not even necessarily that he's priced too high. It's that Rashford's been so good and so affordable that if you're only having one or the other, you know, Rashford's on 44% ownership.
Yeah.
What about Tony Martial, Praz, as a United fan? Is he someone come game week 37 we might want to flirt with? You know, Bournemouth, Chelsea, Fulham to end the season, including a double game week in those last two game weeks.
Look, he's never going to get two starts. That's just how that's the steady state now with Martial. He's going to get a game. He's going to get a few minutes in another game. So I expect him to start, for example, midweek against Brighton. But will he then start on the weekend? Maybe not. In the double, he'll start one of the games if he's not injured by then. So, I mean, he's really good. Erik ten Hag really likes him and rates him. And when he's fit, he's the number one striker. But he just cannot start every single game. And now that we have Sancho playing really well, he gets a lot of minutes on the left. So that means Rashford is also competing with Martial up top. So it just makes it more difficult to punt on somebody like Martial. I would say if you're looking for three Man United, there's nothing wrong with going for a De Gea, a Shaw and a Rashford. Yeah. Or a Rashford and a Bruno and a defender. So you don't have to go for a Martial punt. But again, team structures get really weird by the end of the season. People go for their end game punts. And I think if Martial is one of those, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, and what about Villa? They played, who obviously lost 1-0 to United over the weekend. Watkins owners, what are you doing now? Because the fixtures aren't great. He's blanked in the last three, I think it is. Is it time to sell him?
I think his next fixture is away to Wolves, which is fine. I think Wolves have been better at home. So it's not a great fixture like the Brighton 6-0, which was Wolves away. But after that, they play Spurs, Liverpool, Brighton, which are all okay games. I mean, all these teams are suspect defensively. So I think Watkins will do okay until the end of the season. Having said that, he is competing with other good strikers that will be more appealing going forward. So when we'll come to Man City, we'll talk about this little 6 million gem that some people punted on that could be an option later. We obviously have Isak or Wilson. So there's other players that will either have doubles or amazing fixtures that you could look to ship Watkins. And that's basically the idea that I will have as well, because I have Haaland at the moment as my one slot. That's not going anywhere. I've dead-ended the third striker spot, which is when I went for Greenwood. So this Watkins spot is the spot that I will play around with to get my Newcastle striker, to get my Man City striker if I have to.
Yeah, so we've got similar setup. I've got Haaland, Greenwood and Jota.
Right.
And yeah, again, like I would love to keep Jota long term, but I'll probably end up switching him to a Newcastle mid, depending on the minutes, or forward rather, depending on the minutes he gets.
Yeah.
So you mentioned City there. Before we addressed some of those gems in the City team, Haaland this week, Praz, if you captained him, but didn't triple captain him, if you just captained him, for every point he scored, you actually lost ground in terms of overall rank. Effective ownership is a wonderful thing. Yeah, I mean, I was surprised how many still had their triple captain. Fair play for those that held it, because using it on Haaland this game week, great shout. You've done well there. It's a nice double game week, and I'm sure those points continue. The points weren't there for Kevin De Bruyne owners, Praz. A few had a little punt on Kevin De Bruyne. Those that were on a wild card especially, I saw a fair few wild carders looking at Kevin De Bruyne. In fact, I think currently the world number one was on wildcard, Ali Hangarov in Azerbaijan, and he put KDB in his team, and I completely understand why. But didn't make the squad. We don't know if he'll play midweek, but for those that went for his replacement, 6 million Alvarez, fair play. Great decision.
Yeah, absolutely fair play. I mean, in one of those classic FPL moves where you got lucky with a good decision. So you need both to work to have an amazing outcome. And I think people who went for Alvarez got that, where you knew that KDB has some niggles, because when he came off against Arsenal, I think Pep did mention that he asked to come off because he has a niggle. But then in the press conference, Pep didn't say anything other than Ake is out. So, you know, people went for De Bruyne, and fair enough, because last season we saw what De Bruyne does by at the end of the season. We remember those four goals against Wolves. I mean, De Bruyne really comes into his own as the season is finishing off and he peaks. And so I think he was a fair shout, and he still could be, because obviously they still have a game left this double game week. But I think for Alvarez owners, it is amazing. The guy has over 8 points a game whenever he starts. Only Haaland matches that in terms of what Man City does. Not Grealish, not De Bruyne. Nobody has the points per start that Alvarez does. So if you can predict an Alvarez start, you can pretty much be sure that he's going to get you a return, if not more. So that was absolutely amazing and great for people who went there.
Yeah, fair play. I think you're right. Like, you put yourself in the position to get lucky. He not only starts and he returns. If De Bruyne is out for more than that one game, then yeah, you got really, really lucky, because I don't think many were guessing that. But look, you got to put yourself in those positions. And someone I put myself in a position to get lucky with, I thought was Jack Grealish a few weeks back, and he's done really well. He seems absolutely nailed on that left-hand side. And again, when we're worried about Pep rotating players with the Champions League coming up, you look at someone like Jack Grealish, and he seems to be a bit of a fitness monster. He's getting 90 minutes, 90 minutes, 90 minutes, which is a really good sign for those that are worried about Man City rotation moving forward around those Real Madrid games. But Grealish hit the bar. He had a couple of shots. He's linking really well with Haaland again at the weekend. And there was a couple of nice combinations between Grealish and Haaland, which were either well saved or just went wide. And I'm really happy with that combination for the run-in. I think Grealish is exceptional value for money at 7.1. My concern with Grealish was that he doesn't shoot enough. And he's actually 7.3 now. I think I was looking at my price if I was to sell him. That's how much he's gone up in value in the last couple of weeks. My problem with Grealish was always just gets the assists, or just gets the assist threat even. But now he's definitely starting to shoot more. That's something I'm sure him and Pep have been working on, is his goal threat. Not just now, but I think probably this season. But he's been working up to it. And it's great to see Grealish be a little bit more greedy. I think we need a greedy Grealish, because historically we've had a very greedy Foden. And when Foden plays, and even Sterling and Sané, when you look at the Man City wide men, I include Mahrez in this actually, all the Man City wide men have always sort of shot on sight, and they've all been fairly greedy. But I think Pep probably likes that Grealish is always looking for Haaland, but at the same time, when you're in the right position to shoot, don't look for Haaland and go for goal, and he's starting to do that now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was not a good watch as somebody who sold Grealish. And obviously, I had my reasons. I had to fit in Salah into the midfield. So I had to sell one midfielder. And it had to be Grealish. But it was actually very unnerving. That bar, I mean, you could see that dipping in and going into the goal, but it just didn't. It stayed out. But you're absolutely right. And I think in a way, a lot of people, when they defend against Man City, had started to leave Grealish as, you know, he's not the guy we need to press because he's not going to shoot. He's basically going to cut and look for someone else.
Yeah.
And obviously Pep has seen that and has told Grealish, look, if they're not coming to you, just go in, cut in and shoot. So he was very lively. And I think we're starting to see the FPL potential. I mean, he already has done well for a lot of his owners in the past few game weeks. But he's a perfectly good keep for the rest of the season.
Yeah, a group of players that hasn't done well for their owners is Man City defenders, Praz. What's going on? Because I this week was desperate to take that extra 4-point hit for a goalkeeper transfer. And I was set all week. I was thinking, if I'm going to make my goalkeeper transfer, it'll be Raya out for Ederson in. And as we know, the activity in FPL throughout the week, if loads of players are getting popular, like say Diogo Jota was, you see price rises. And I was priced out by the Friday. I wasn't willing to go early on those moves until the press conferences. So I was 0.1 short of going Ederson. I thought, do I keep with Raya? It's got Nottingham Forest at home. Or do I find an alternative? And fortunately, I went to De Gea and it paid off. But I was really annoyed. I was 0.1 short of Ederson. So as soon as he conceded at the weekend, I was thinking, yes, that's great. I'm so glad I was priced out. And De Gea, of course, kept a clean sheet and Raya didn't. But surely Man City start getting clean sheets sooner or later, because the data suggests that they are an elite defence that have very few shots against them, that will keep a ton of clean sheets, but they always find a way of conceding one.
Two clean sheets in the last 12. It's so frustrating to watch it. I mean, I've only owned Ederson now for one game. I could afford him, so I did go for him. And the thinking is that, look, I mean, this season there is no, or at least not at the second half of the season, there's no Cancelo. So there is no upside defender at Man City. And so what you can do is you can get a defender that will get you these clean sheet points if they come. But then you see Ederson and you go, okay, he's cheaper than Stones. He's 5.4, which is not a very high price. Yes, he doesn't get any saves or many saves. He doesn't get many bonus points, but you hope the clean sheets will trickle in. But he keeps conceding with the first or the second shot that he faces every single game. And look, I'm hopeful they have, like I said, only two clean sheets in the last 12, but in all competitions, they have a lot more. I mean, I think it's about 12 clean sheets in the last 20. So it's completely different when it's not the Premier League. And you just think that it's one of those things where it's a little bit of bad luck if you own a City defender and they either get injured like Ake or they get rotated, or in Edison's case, they just concede off the first shot.
Yeah, yeah. So poor. Ake, by the way, is back training, I noticed, for those that might be invested there. He was someone I sold at the weekend. But yeah, good to see him back training. I think he tweeted on Monday night. And on Monday night, Praz, I guess the final game we should probably touch on is that Leicester 2, Everton 2 result. Yeah. Chances galore. These are two defences we can probably target. They feel so vulnerable, both these back lines, don't they?
I mean, they do, and Premier League football doesn't peak more when both the teams have absolutely everything to go for the game. I mean, this game was incredible to watch in terms of the energy that the teams were giving, and obviously the chances that they ended up giving at the other end because they were so keen to get a result here. It was a superb game, and you saw vintage Vardy, you saw vintage Calvert-Lewin, but I think as teams, these are not teams that we'll be buying players from, like you mentioned. It'll be teams that we will target to get our players from, because they will need a result. They can't just sit back and hope for a draw. Or if they do, they can't just afford that they end up, you know, conceding a late goal. They have to go for results.
Yeah, and I just looked. Liverpool and Newcastle both still have to play Leicester. So again, if we're looking at targeting defences, and we're well invested in those two teams, and Brighton and Man City, another two teams we're well invested in, well, they both have to play Everton still. So again, I'm expecting goals, 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 I think.
Yeah, I mean, you can also argue the other way, where Sean Dyche says there is no way, we're going to attack these teams and get a result, and he could completely shut shop. So we just don't know what to expect from these relegation teams. You always have one of these cases. You and I know, we've been watching Premier League for 15, 20 years. You get these freak results at the end of the season where some team that is fighting relegation finds form out of nowhere, ekes out a 1-0 result, and you know it could be one of these games. So it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah. Thoughts for the rest of the season, Praz, before we go? Any sort of final targets or anything from you? Are you kind of looking at targets in terms of overall rank or mini leagues and mates to be beaten?
Well, I mean, I think we all want to finish this season strongly. And I think given that we have two more double game weeks to come, there's going to be potential for some punts and some rank changes. And I think I'm the same. I've just cracked the 50K after being outside it for the whole season. And it's been a slow season for me this year. But I just hope to finish strong. And I don't think I have an overall rank target, because we sometimes shackle ourselves with these things and say, I want top 10K or whatever. Just keep making good decisions for these double game weeks. I think a lot of teams are well set up, so we might see some divergence in terms of people taking some punts that are different from what the templates are doing, or what, you know, the common transfers are. And I can see that happening in some Brighton players. If they don't have them, Man United people will start getting different to get that punt. And I think Newcastle, like we talked about. What about yourself?
I'm similar there. No, I think I echo your thoughts. Like, again, I don't like to shackle myself too much. And this season's been a bit of a downer from me. I lost a huge amount of rank recently from trying to be too clever and going against someone like an Ollie Watkins, who really punished. But again, I think I'm excited about game week 37-8. Like, that run-in is always fun. I like to take a punt on the final game week if I can. So game week 38, usually I'm kind of... I'm looking at a differential captain of this season that could be different. We've never had Haaland in the game, but maybe a couple of rogue transfers in. I think game week 38 always causes some surprises. And again, with so much to play for at both ends of the table, as we usually see in the Premier League, I think it will be a fun end to the season. And again, I expect goals. So I don't think I'll be banking a huge amount on clean sheets between now and the end of the season. But I do think we'll see an increase in goals.
Yeah, and then there's also the motivations for these teams as they head in, like you mentioned, right? I mean, things will start to change very quickly. Like Man City obviously have the two ties with Real Madrid. What happens around those ties when they play Leeds and Everton that are just before those Champions League ties? What happens in the Champions League places if Newcastle and Man United have sort of won, you know, cemented that place, if that happens, and then Liverpool lose a little bit of momentum because Champions League is gone? What happens in relegation? You know, teams that have done well recently, like a Bournemouth or Crystal Palace, what motivations will they have going into the end of the season? So I think watching this side story on each team's motivations may be a key to know which of the games will actually have a lot of goals that you can target.
Yeah, so true. And again, those finals in Champions League, will City be there? And how does that affect their selection in 38? And the FA Cup as well always affects some of those Premier League lineups as well. So yeah, lots to keep an eye on. And I'm sure the pod will be steering you through in the final weeks.
Indeed. And I think before we sign off, I just want to remind everyone that the final matches of Game Week 34 will obviously have a big impact on the decisions you make. So do hold your transfers if you can, especially, you know, wait for the Brighton v Man United match, which is the last one on Thursday. But then Kelly, Jules and Sam will be back with the FPL pod to help with those transfer decisions on Thursday. For now, it's a goodbye from me.
And a goodbye from me.